Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. You've heard me say this forever. I do these interviews for an audience of real entrepreneurs who listen to these interviews and build their businesses and hopefully come back here to do an interview of their own. It's the circle of Mixergy. So I say that today because today's guest did that. He not only caught one of my past interviews, he took the transcript, sent it to his friend, and then that helped him figure out what to do, what business to create. I invited him here to talk about how he built his business because it's really taken off with no outside funding, right, Mark?
We've now got a reasonable amount of outside funding.
Oh, you do? So okay.
A little bit unfair, but yeah, we got it off the ground and to a sort of reasonable size without taking on any funding.
The reason I assume no outside funding is when I asked you before the interview started, what's your goal with this? And you said, you know, we're not raising money. So I know that's one of the big reasons why people come to do an interview on Mixergy to expose themselves to investors.
Yeah. We just raised money. So that's
okay. So it's not that you're against it. It's just you're all good. You did it.
I'm very pro money.
That guy who's pro money, who you're hearing on the screen, is also really pro education. His name is Mark Hughes. Mark Hughes is the founder of Tutorful. It's a marketplace where parents can find and book private tutors for their school age kids. We're going to find out how he built up this marketplace. Marketplaces are notoriously difficult because you have to go after two different groups of people. He did it. It's going great. And we're going to do it thanks to two fantastic sponsors. The first is my favorite conference ever. It's Fireside Conf. I'll tell you about that. And the second, it's a hosting company, HostGator. And I'll tell you why we use HostGator later on. But first, Mark, good to have you here.
No, good to be here.
What was the interview that you caught on Mixergy? I know you've listened to several of them, but what's the one that you sent out to your friend?
Yeah, so it was actually there's a business in the US called Wyzant. So it was an interview between yourself and Andrew, and it was really sort of just when we were starting out. We were sort of bandying around ideas for the goal. What we were trying to do was trying to sort of lower the cost of private tuition. And we had several ideas about how we might go about doing that. I came across the interview, thought it was really, really good. And my friend and sort of co-founder now, Scott, he was a private tutor. I sent him basically like an edited verse of them saying, you know, pulling out the sort of key highlights. I literally went through with a highlighter and then sort of scanned it back in and sent it over to them.
Wait, you printed it out? You highlighted it with an actual marker and sent it to him?
It's easier to do that, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's you know what? It's interesting that you would do that because you're a guy who actually went to school to learn how to put holes in the ground. What does that mean exactly?
Yeah, so, well, I studied engineering, so that was kind of what I was interested in. I was interested in building things, and engineering was kind of the standard career path for, you know, people who kind of like messing around with things and putting things together. I tried that out for a year, actually. I was a structural engineer on a building site. It's in Glasgow, which is, you know, pretty far north. There's no glamour involved at all. And I pretty quickly realized that, you know, that wasn't really what I wanted to do.
Literally, it's because you told our producer, look, I was frustrated telling people where to put a hole in the ground. It's not what I dreamt this thing would be, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like it's 90% of it is pretty mundane, stuff. I found anyway.
All right, and then you got a job at an investment bank, and you started to meet founders. Founders like which ones?
I met a couple of really interesting guys. I met the founder of Ryanair. Really interesting guy for a lot of sort of notorious reasons. I encourage people to have a look at some YouTube.
Founder of which company?
Ryanair. They're a budget.
Oh, Ryanair. Oh, yeah. He wrote such a fantastic book all about how he keeps lowering the prices by giving people a crappy experience, but he gets them from point A to point B. And he's got good attitude. I love it. Okay, so you got to meet him. What was he like in person?
Yeah, he lives what he talks. So normally people sort of turn up with an entourage of advisors and like that. He traveled, Ryanair. So every flight he takes, he makes sure that he can get places on Ryanair. He's a radical thinker. So one of the ideas they were mulling over at the time was having everyone, stand up. So they were exploring the idea of, you know, if you go on a bus, you can hold on to the handle, so you can squeeze loads of people in. They were sort of mulling around whether that would get past the regulators, would it be safe. So he's a radical thinker.
Let me just put a point on that. It's, can we get everyone to stand up on our airplane so we can squeeze more people into an airplane? Give them a little worse experience, but reduce the price. That's the way that this guy thinks.
Exactly. Right. That was what he wanted to do.
Okay.
I don't think it worked out.
No, but I love that he thinks that way. Michael O'Leary, right? That's his name?
Michael O'Leary, yeah.
Okay. So you got to meet him. You got to meet also the founder of Groupon, Andrew Mason. What'd you think of him?
Well, I actually met Eric. So it was a really, really interesting sort of moment for me. So I was sort of a young, was my boss doing the meeting. And it was just after Andrew had left. So Eric had taken over as CEO. I realized that Eric was basically the same age as me. And he had already started a company, grown it to, I think, like 10,000 employees at that time. And had already been sort of removed, or left from the CEO position. He's done a hell of a lot, and I'm kind of sitting here, still mulling over whether I want to start my own business. So, it was just a good reminder that, you're never too early to start thinking about these things. And the best way to kind of do it was, just do it, get started with it.
One of the things that I understood you took away from this was, first of all, look at the possibility. And these guys are taking on multiple companies, like Eric Lefkofsky. He is one of the guys. He's still currently the chairman of Groupon and one of the co-founders of it. And one of the things that you took away was, look at how much he's doing. He's building multiple companies. And I'm thinking, should I or should I not start one? And number two, it's possible. These guys are regular people. It's not like they've got some kind of like floating way of walking into a room. They're people just like us. And so you said, I got to jump in here and I've got to create something, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like every now and then you would come across like a true genius where you're kind of in awe of their presence and they just say such deep and insightful things. But for the most part, like they're normal guys, they're smart and they're switched on. But I meet people like that every day. But they all like had a sort of passion, and that was the first thing, and they just went and did it. And that was kind of the realization that I had, in the job, was these are just kind of regular guys. But they've just gone and tried to do something. It's not been from day one that they were destined to do this thing. It's like they tried it and it's grown and grown and grown and created these amazing companies.
Okay. So you now have to come up with your idea.
Yeah.
The way that you ended up with Tutorful, if I understand it right, is your friend was running a tutoring company. The question I have for you is, why this friend? Why do you need him? Why not just start off on your own?
Yes, it's a good question. But, it never, ever crossed my mind. I think saying that he was running a tutoring company is probably like over-glamorizing what he was doing. He was basically a one-man tutoring company and was trying to get a couple of other people to join along, and that's the kind of time period we started talking about. Well, hey, this is a really interesting industry because it's quite old-fashioned. It's a network of people. You take calls on the phone and you give people a ring and you try and matchmake people.
Like, yes,
this is dying for something better to come along. It was never sort of a question whether I'd go and do something on my own. It was like, who can I find to sort of build something with? And I really like the idea of working with, like a friend rather than some random.
What is it that you liked? We're talking about Scott Woodley. What did you like about Scott?
There's a lot of things I like about Scott. Scott's one of the most determined guys I have ever met. Determined and passionate.
Give me an example of that, because it feels like everyone thinks they're determined, but most people are not. They're kind of lazy. What makes you say that Scott's determined?
So, a couple of examples from the early days, like most of what we had to do to sort of get the business off the ground was really unglamorous stuff. So, we got 10,000 flyers printed, and we hadn't got the money to pay someone to deliver them.
I want to get to that story in a moment. But before that, did you see anything about him before you started your business? Because the flyer story is a great one worth telling, but that happened afterwards. Is it because he's a cyclist and a runner and you saw that the guy just kept going out there? And that feels like the kind of sport where you have to be determined, where you have to be persistent and consistent.
Yeah, I mean, he'd sort of given up his job and had grown like basically a sort of network of different services that he was offering schools, like almost from like these things didn't even exist before. So, you know, they were quite small scale, but there would be things like he was running an after school club for disadvantaged kids, and it'd be based around a story. And he's sort of grown this all pretty quickly. He is into sports. His sort of main characteristic is that he sort of comes after a new thing every couple of months, and we'll just get obsessed with it for a long, long time. We'll become really, really good at it, and then move on to the next thing pretty quickly. So it's sort of like a lot
that
of
would kind of scare me in a co-founder.
Yeah, it's
right, because you want someone who's going to stick with things and not look for the next shiny object, but. All right, I get what you liked about him. It seems like he's someone who was actually starting a business, which is a step forward beyond what you'd already taken. And it seems like you're kind of interested in online or in education in general. And the idea that this guy was doing tutoring in the same way that it was done before the internet, still to this day, maybe made you think, tell me if I'm wrong here, you know what, why don't we just do this? Why don't we modernize this?
Yeah, you would think that would be the logical step. There was, we didn't really have a single aha moment. Our first business idea was actually, physical tutoring centers where kids would be dropped off. We would use computers, to sort of teach them, and they would be supervised by some, you know, good tutors. We thought, well, you know, it's cheaper. It should scale. We kind of quickly realized like, this business already exists, and it's pretty big, and we weren't bringing anything really new to it. We also realized it required a hell of a lot of money. Like real estate is a real estate business to some extent. So, you know, once we'd sort of run a couple of numbers and sort of figured out, like, we've got to get 1,000 people through this center every year. It's not gonna fly. About that time we started thinking, well, actually, I think pure online is the best way to go. Let's not think of it as a tech business, let's think of it as an online business. And we sort of hit upon the idea of a curated marketplace, essentially, where tutors can list themselves. But we're sort of providing a certain level of quality that ensures that parents are going to get a really good experience.
Okay. All right, I get the vision for it. I understand also why you wouldn't want to hire the tutors yourself. That becomes really difficult to scale. All right, so now I understand why you'd also check out the WiseAnt interview that I did with Andrew, the founder of WiseAnt. Basically, they do in the U.S. what you wanted to do, I guess, starting in the U.K. and then expanding beyond, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
You know what? You guys called the company at the time Tutora. Why did you change your name to Tutorful?
It's a good question. The sort of short answer is that we eventually want to take this into other countries, and we did very little research on whether this was being used elsewhere when we started. So we realized that it's trademarked in the US, it's trademarked in Europe. We kind of realized, well, if we want to do something with this, then we're going to have to change name at some point. Let's do it when we're a bit smaller rather than when it becomes a real problem. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it is. Okay. Did they come after you, the people who had the trademark in the US? Or did you jump on it before?
We weren't doing anything in the US. So they didn't come after us, but we kind of realized that, you know, at some point they're going to realize. I like the name Tutora, but I've really grown to like the name Tutorful. It kind of takes a long time for something to, I found it took a long time for me to like that, but now I much prefer it.
You know, we spend way too much time thinking about the ideal name. The truth is, what the hell is Ryanair? Right?
Yeah, exactly.
There's nothing there. It's the personality that you throw onto the name that really matters. The name itself is nothing. All right. So I see that you got it. Then you went out there and you got a freelancer to build your website. How did that turn out? Where'd you get your freelancer? Let's be honest about the location.
Where did we go? We actually went fairly local. A place called
It's called what?
So Barnsley in Yorkshire.
Barnsley,
yeah. I wouldn't expect to.
Yeah, I thought maybe you went to Upwork. Why'd you go there instead of Upwork or somewhere like that if you didn't have any money?
I didn't really know any better at the time. So me and Scott were still working while we were looking to get the website built, which was like a real mistake. we hadn't put enough thought and time into what the design was going to be. We didn't spend a whole lot of time trying to find someone. I had a quick look on a website for, I did a little bit of programming, and I came across someone who I thought, you know, from their forum posts sounded like he knew what he was doing. And to be fair, like he was a good programmer. So I think we didn't do too bad a job, but a lot of this early stuff was not particularly well thought out. So, maybe hiring a team of people in India would have been a cheaper way of, to do it.
What did you want the first version of the site to do?
We wanted it to do absolutely loads, and it did very, very little. So the first version of the site looks really good. We'd focused heavily on like the design, making sure the page looked good. But behind the scenes, it did almost nothing. So there was no payment system. There was no real messaging system. So when we sort of got our first couple of clients, we would literally send them like an invoice, and do like manual bank transfers to them. We didn't have any way for the tutors to actually book lessons. So once they sent a message to the tutor, we'd ring them up and say, "Hey, like I'm acting on behalf of the tutor. He's free at this time. What time can you do?"
And could a tutor even list herself on your site?
That was pretty much the only functionality it had. It had the ability to list yourself.
That's it. And then the students could see who was listed, but they couldn't communicate and ask questions. They couldn't pay. Could they pay?
They couldn't pay.
They could not pay, and they couldn't book a time. All they could do is say, "Hey, I'm interested," and then you would take over by phone at that point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was a really instructive learning experience for us, because we instead of like having this idea of how things work, and then you go and build it and you find out actually like how people want it to work or how it should be used, we just ended up building like what me and Scott were doing. So,
you know what? Let me pause there. I want to come into my sponsorship message first, and then we'll get into that. Because I think that's actually really interesting that you decided we don't have the best software. We're going to have to do it manually. And then what we do is going to inform what we end up coding up. But the first sponsor is a company. Actually, it's not a company. It's an event. I freaking love this event. It is an event called Fireside Conf. Do you go to a lot of conferences, Mark? It's kind of weird. I'm addressing you in the ad. You do?
Sorry. I don't go to a huge amount of conferences.
Why? Because conferences suck. Don't you think?
I think I've been to really good conferences, and every time I go to one, I think actually this was. Like it's useful to step outside like the bubble of like, you know, the office. But I try to spend, both me and Scott trying to spend like as much time as possible in the office. We never used to go to conferences if we had no money and we didn't get any invites. Now like we start to get a lot more invites, and they're free, and you know, they make you feel a bit important and that kind of thing. But I resist the urge as much as possible to go to conferences. We're also like out of the way, so all the conferences in London. So it's a lot of time, and I would rather try and focus like as much as possible on the business itself rather than. I've been to conferences, a lot of conferences, and I kind of know like a lot of the messages are pretty similar. It's just like doing them.
So here's the thing that the problem I have with them is you really feel forced into seats to sit and watch something that you could watch on YouTube or frankly get better on a podcast.
Yeah.
But there are advantages. So here's what Fireside Conf decided to do. They said, you know what? We want to first of all be clear about who's the right fit for this thing, because we're going to have everyone hang out together. So they have an application process. Once you apply, if you get in, you end up going to this like legitimate summer camp location. It's someone's summer camp. One of the founders loved summer camp. He said, "I'm renting out this whole summer camp for the weekend, and I'm going to invite entrepreneurs, investors, and interesting people in the tech space, mostly entrepreneurs, some investors, some interesting people in the tech space, and also in the weed space, which is getting bigger and bigger." There's a good group of people there.
That's not a thing here.
What?
That's not a thing here, actually.
Yeah, no, it is actually. This happens in Canada. And in Canada, it's become a thing. It's also a thing here in California. Anyway, you're all together. At the end of the event, as I was walking out, this guy was telling me about how he got a divorce, how he's dating, who he's dating, stuff like that. And a friend of mine who was standing next to me said, I can't believe he's talking that way. I go, why not? He goes, that's a venture capitalist. He's one of the biggest VCs in this whole area. And he's getting that open. And I realized the reason that he's getting that open is we're all in this campground together for a whole frickin' weekend. There's not much else to do. No one's even looking down at their phones once. Because there's limited internet, frankly. There's a spot where you can go if you need internet, but it's limited everywhere else. So we're all hanging out together, literally sitting by the campfire, literally talking to each other in person, having good meals together, having fun activities. And yes, there's some programming where you could go sit. They have like five different campfires during the day, and there are people who they curated to speak, and those people will give a very casual talk about what they do well. You can go there, or you can frankly just go swim in the lake, which is what I did a lot with other people. You can get a room to yourself, but most of us wanted a room together with other people so you can hang. It's an incredible, incredible experience that just happens to be really good for business. If you're out there and you want to go, go check out my favorite event ever. It's called firesideconf.com/MixerG, firesideconf.com/MixerG. They're going to see that you're from the MixerG community. They'll take it really seriously because if you're listening to an interview this deep in, you're probably a perfect fit for that conference. And frankly, go out there and get to know other people like you. One of the best things that came to me from that is from meeting people at conferences is I remember sitting at a conference telling someone I had a problem with a website and he said, you know, I could solve it. And I didn't even think that there was a solution for it. And he sat right there and he started building this thing for me, just like a little bit of code on my WordPress site. One of the best things about conferences is you get to have casual conversations that bring up issues that you're wrestling with and wouldn't even think to bring up to someone. All right, firesideconf.com/MixerG. All right.
That's good. Nah.
The one
reason I tend to go to most conferences these days is actually to meet people rather than the chats themselves. I like speaking to other founders because you personally, like, I don't have that huge network of people, so
right.
You end up sort of speaking about a lot of the same things. So I find it.
Yeah, and saying, you know what, we were at a conference together, both of us sitting and watching a presentation, is not really the bond. The bond is, hey, I was rowing a boat on the lake with you. That's the bond. I was sitting by a fire with you at night just talking about life. That's the bond that you can then call on and say, when you need something, text the person and say, hey, it's Andrew. Would you please help me with this issue? All right, really, great event. I think all events need to do this. The problem with other events is that not only do they force you to sit there, but they have these little groups where you can go and hang out with people, but they're for a short amount of time and they're curated by a few people and exclude everyone from the conference. Frankly, I know because I do it. I do dinners at conferences and I don't allow everyone in. I'll take like eight of the speakers and I'll go out for dinner with them or eight people who I need to meet. All right, let's get back to your story. You did a lot of this stuff by yourself. That means you literally would call up the tutors. You literally would book the student. I keep using the word literally here, but it's true here, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was a two-man call center for about 6 months. We were just making calls all day.
Why didn't you feel like a failure, Mark? I mean, you're a guy who's an investment banker. You went to school to be an engineer. You're sitting there making phone calls like a $2 an hour virtual assistant from a country that doesn't have any money?
Yeah, I mean, I was trying to program. So I would like set aside part of my day for programming, which I loved. Like, I really enjoyed doing it. And I would just dread. Like, I knew that, right, today I have to come 4 o'clock when people are coming off work. I've got to spend 3 hours just on the phone. Scott was doing calls literally from like 8 till 8.
As a tutor?
No, trying to arrange lessons.
You guys were just basically sitting there booking people together.
Yeah, I mean, at first it was okay because we weren't getting much traffic. So, you know, like a new inquiry comes through our system when we're like, right, okay, you know, this was exciting. We've got a customer here. And then it kind of got bigger and bigger and bigger until we realized, like, actually, you know, we're not spending enough time like improving the product and building this stuff out. We're just trying to stand still, essentially. We're just trying to stay afloat.
All right, I'm going to get to what you guys did there, but I want to ask two things. First, I want to know about this thing where you guys quit your job and how that impacted you. And second, how you got so many customers. Why don't we start with, It was a low point, though, wasn't it? When you and Scott said, hey, we're quitting our jobs, we're focusing on this on a full-time basis, how did you decide how did you know when the right time to do that was?
The answer, like, we just knew that things weren't going to happen unless we did something about it. We were sending emails to each other. We were saying, okay, well, let's have the business plan sorted by here. Let's have a think about how we're going to do the marketing. Let's set up the company. And like, you've just got busy lives and you've got the comfort. We kind of realized we've got these comfy jobs, where we're earning money. There was no pressure to do anything. And so nothing was getting done. So we basically took the decision, right? Okay. This day, we're going to leave. Let's move down together. I don't know anyone in the city. I've got nothing to do. Like, I have to make this work. And it was real sort of powerful forcing function for just making you like do things, and get stuff going. Cause we hadn't got huge amounts of money. So we were like, okay, unless we can get something going in a certain period of time, like, I'm just going to have to ask my old job back. It was brave, but it was the only thing I think.
The only thing you could do.
Yeah.
All right. So going back then to how you got all these customers, you actually remember your very first customer. How did you get them?
I remember my very first customer because it was a £20 lesson. So like nothing really. Like it was just an hour long math lesson for his kid. It was 8 o'clock at night. So it was going to be, I think, well, maybe 7 o'clock until 8 o'clock at night. And I remember I wasn't in the office. I got a call. I was actually out rock climbing. I got a call, from him saying, you know, the tutor hasn't turned up. I need my money back. This was like the worst thing that could possibly have happened, even though it was like totally inconsequential in the course of the company.
Right.
Like,
right. What's $25 or £20?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I was stressed, like I rang around like all the other tutors that we had. I think we got about 10 tutors on the site by then. All the other tutors to see if we could find a replacement. No one would do it. It was a really sort of stressful time. The tutor was actually someone that Scott had to turn away himself. The student was someone that Scott had to turn away himself. So it was kind of like our first word of mouth referral. It was pretty bad.
I can't believe you guys were charging £20. I looked it up right now. That's $26.67. That's how much you guys were charging to teach what?
The pound is weak.
Sorry?
The pound is pretty weak. Yeah. So it was an hour of maths. I think in general, like the value that people put on tuition is too low. Like people don't think anything of dropping £50 for an hour long massage. But having someone who's really qualified, this guy had a PhD, he's coming to you, he's traveling to you, doing an hour of maths and coming back and he's charging £20. Like I still think it's too low. So we try pretty hard to make sure that tutors are actually charging the right price, instead of, what they think is a price that's going to get them business. So we have a sort of minimum floor at an hourly rate of 15. Bear in mind that like, the minimum wage here is $7.50-ish. So it's still a good wage for someone who would have another job. But I generally think the society just places too little value on this stuff.
Okay. So that one didn't work out. And that came through a referral, right?
Yeah.
And then you expanded to the flyers. Now let's bring up the flyer thing you were telling me about earlier, because I think it's fascinating. I saw this in my notes and I said, okay, so that didn't work and let's see what did work. But I was wrong. It did. Where did you guys go? What's the flyer thing that you guys used?
Yeah, so basically we needed customers from somewhere. And we had literally no one. I think we've got about two or three people through contacts of Scott. So we hit first on the idea of standing in town. You've seen these guys standing in town with a pack of flyers hassling people. So we were sort of, you know, have you got any kids? Have you thought about getting a private tutor? GCSEs are coming up. Exams are coming up. That kind of worked. But it basically involved me and Scott spending our entire day standing around town center looking like idiots. And it's like pretty dispiriting because 9 out of 10 people like do not want you there. But we did, like, at the end of every day, we would have a list of phone numbers or emails that we could sort of then ring up and try and get the book tuition.
Well, you collected their email addresses. If they were interested, you'd say, give me your email address and I'll follow up with you.
Yeah, I mean, email addresses, we realized we're probably not the best. Phone numbers, you need a phone number. You can sell things over the phone. Email is too easy to ignore.
So someone who would take your flyer, seemed interested, you talk to them and you say, I'll call you, give me your number and we'll set this up.
Exactly.
And that worked. It wasn't creepy.
It wasn't too creepy. I think people appreciated that we were just, you know, two youngish people trying to start a business. I think we persuaded a lot of people who really didn't want to get their kid a tutor to actually have a tutor, which you can only do. They would have 4 or 5 lessons and then stop. So it wasn't a great idea. But we wanted to do something slightly bigger. So we realized, well, you know, we'll try flyering people's houses. So we literally posted flyers through the letterboxes of, must have been 10,000 houses.
Personally, walking door to door doing this?
Yeah, it took us, we spent an entire week, literally like 6 hours a day.
Why did you do this? Why didn't you just hire some kid to do this? At, what'd you say, 7, 10, 8 pounds an hour?
I don't know. I think in retrospect, that would have been sensible. We realized we had this finite pot of money and wanted to get it going without
running out. We're not wasting money on this. We're going to go out there and do it. Okay.
Yeah. And I think like if you learn how to do it yourself, like you always end up doing a better job. The idea was that we'll try this. We'll see what happens. And if it works, well, then we can pay someone to do it. This is our more scalable option, right? Standing in town is really hard to get someone to do it, but we could just have like 2 or 3 people who spend all their time posting flyers. That again, like worked okay. But only if you sort of valued mine and Scott's time at like a very, very low rate. But we did get calls from that.
Okay. So you got some customers from there. How did you get the other side of the marketplace, the tutors?
The tutor side was actually not too bad. There's a website called Gumtree, which is basically Craigslist in the UK.
I'm on it now.
People advertise everything on it. You literally get anything on it. And tutors advertise their services on it. So we went through and we just messaged every single person who was advertising and said, hey, you know, like, you're obviously looking for more clients. Do you want to come join our site? They had to take a leap of faith. We had no presence whatsoever. It was just this website.
But how much of a leap were they really taking? The truth is, they would get paid once they got a job. If they didn't get a job, they weren't waste. You guys, the reason I know it is because you guys still are on it today. The thing that you guys do is every freaking city in the UK has its own listing on Gumtree because Gumtree lets you list jobs for free, right?
No, we have to pay.
You still pay for every single one. So 12 days ago, somebody at your company put something on there for... here's the headline. Become a private tutor, tutoring jobs in maths, science, English, languages, music, and more, !! In Huddersfield. Then a similar job listing for Oxford. A similar job listing for Preston. A similar job listing for Stockton-on-Tees. A similar job listing for York. A similar job list for Leeds. They just went through and they put it in everywhere at £20 an hour plus. This is you guys. It still works to this day.
We still do that. Like, it's... Yeah, I think this is like one of the benefits of doing all this stuff yourself, small to start off with. Like, trying to figure out like how to scale, basically like growth hacks, is something we've got really good at. So we sort of worked out like, actually, we can just do this. We could do this pretty much forever now. Like, it's not a big part of how we sort of get tutors now, but it's still there and it's still.
But it worked. So the first marketplace, the marketplace. Started to form because you guys were handing out flyers in person at like the park or door to door, putting it in people's mailboxes. The other side came because you were going to Gumtree and saying, if you need to get paid to do this, here's a site we're hiring. And you only pay whenever there's a match. You start to get people to connect. You start to bring in revenue. And now you are driving yourselves freaking nuts because the two of you have to sit there and dial and connect and so on. How did you get the next version of the website? The one that didn't require you to do all this? Because I think you told our producer and you told us here in the interview, you learned a lot by doing this manually. And so what'd you do next?
Yeah, I mean, it was basically just building out all the stuff that we were figuring out and just trying to find enough time. So, you know, this is where Scott's determination comes in. Scott, like, just did all the phone stuff, and I found a bit of time every single day to write a bit of code. We were still using the freelancer. So, like, together, the website just slowly got better and better. And to the point where, you know, we decided, actually, like, once we've built a messaging system, we don't really need to give them a ring. It still works giving a ring, but like, well, let's see if the website could just run itself. And kind of like, I think about 6-8 months after we started, we had to do no calls anymore. There was literally no calls at all. And we could sort of focus on like building the business. And that was where things started to take off.
Where'd you get the next developer?
Yeah, so I think we got our next developer, it would have been in about March 2016, April 2016.
All right, you know what? Let me take a moment to talk about my second sponsor, and then I want to come back and just say specifically, you did a list of things that were wasting your time. You went to the developer and you said, okay, here's our bullet list of stuff that you need to do. Automate what Scott and I have been doing, right?
Yeah, essentially.
Okay, when I come back, I want to go through what are some of those big ones. What are some of the time wastes? And then how did you translate the work that you did into software? I'll do a quick spot here for a company called HostGator. And the reason I want to talk about HostGator now is I think a lot of people, when they start a business, they overthink the development. Like, look at you guys, Mark, right? You could have created this great marketplace software that actually did all this stuff and would have done it perfectly. It would have been a distraction, right? Especially since you guys aren't deep, hard code developers. I think in many senses, if for many businesses, it's just fine to have a WordPress site. I know that people are going to hate me for saying this because they're going to come up with better ideas that could do this and that. Don't get distracted. Come up with a simple name and then come up with a simple WordPress site that will do enough of it. In fact, let me see. WordPress theme marketplace. I bet you I can find one here. 11 plus best marketplace WordPress themes. Here's another one for Mojo Marketplace. 2018's most popular WordPress themes. Here's another one from ThemeForest. I bought a lot of themes from them. Multi-vendor marketplace WordPress theme. Here's what I'm saying. If I were to come up with an idea like yours today, I wouldn't go and even hire a developer somewhere else. I'd just go throw up a WordPress site on HostGator, toss up one of these themes from any one of these search results here, have it not be best, but just get freaking started. And then I could see where it breaks, where it's deficient, hire someone to patch it a little bit, and then understand where it can't be patched, and boom, now I got my checklist of things that we need to do, and that's when I hire developers to start to build it up. The reason I say this is, whatever your idea is, frankly, there's a third of the internet almost, 30% to be exact, 30% of the internet of websites are using WordPress right now to function as full businesses. There's no reason why anyone who's listening to me who has an idea can't just launch version one on WordPress and then build it up, patch it up, and then build it in their own proprietary software. So if you want to do that, where do you go to host your site? I recommend going to the site that I took I created a side business for chatbots because I freaking love them. I just went to HostGator. We created a hosting plan with them. It did great. We grew the business even more. That hosting plan could not accommodate all the traffic that we were sending it. So we went to HostGator and we said, up it. Give us more. And so we did. We signed a 3-year contract where they gave us way more for much cheaper than anyone else. All right, and we love it. If you want to go get started with them, or frankly, if you don't like your hosting company and want to switch over to them, they'll make it easy. They'll even help migrate you. All you have to do is go to the special URL where, frankly, I'll be honest with you, I get credit for referring you. So you'll be doing me a solid. But also, you will get up to 62% off because I don't know why they don't just round it to 60% off. For some reason, they wanted to say, we give you 62% off. All right, so you're going to get up to 62% off if you go to this URL. The URL is hostgator.com/Mixergy. Hostgator.com/Mixergy. One-click install of WordPress and other platforms if you don't like WordPress, and they'll be able to scale up as your business grows. And if you don't love them, 45-day money-back guarantee, or frankly, you could 10 years from now, 2 years from now, 6 months from now, migrate to someone else because whatever you build on them, you could move off if you don't love them, but you will. HostGator.com/Mixergy. All right, Mark, let's get to the punch list. What are the things that you saw that you needed to have the software do for you?
I mean, the first one was, we didn't have a messaging system. So we wanted a way for tutors and students to like basically be able to send each other messages, but not exchange contact details. This was kind of, it's this tricky balance of like we're essentially a middleman. So we want to have some control over, we want you to speak, but we don't want you to disappear. And there were lots of little things around that where we had to sort of try and get right. We also, a lot of tutors sort of got back to people and would say, you know, I can't help. And we were kind of like, well, we've just wasted that lead essentially. So we built a job board that would sort of automatically post that request to a job board, and other tutors who were close by could say, hey, like, I heard you're looking for a tutor. You know, you haven't picked me, but I'm free. And that actually worked really, really well. Tutors like that as well, because instead of just having to be really passive and wait for someone to come along and say, you know, I'm looking for you, they could actively, you know, they have a list of jobs and they can say, right, this one sounds good. You feel much more proactive about it. That was probably the second big one. The big one really was payments.
To allow the students to pay and then for you guys to pay the tutors, right?
Exactly, yeah. So it's kind of, it was a complicated thing to build, but we wanted it so we didn't have to do anything. There's no buttons to press or anything like that. We charge after the lesson has been finished, which is scheduled. We get our cut and the tutor gets theirs. And that was a sort of really, really good moment. Invoicing hundreds of people is not fun.
What about this? So I was talking to you earlier about how we did chatbots. We started a site. People who saw it said, you know what, I don't want to learn how to build a chatbot. I want to hire someone. So we said, okay, we'll do some matchmaking here and we'll introduce you. And we were getting paid by clients. We were passing the money on to the developers of the bots. The problem that I had was checking in on quality, making sure that the work was done on time, making sure that it was done in the way that the client wanted it done, and it became a nightmare. What did you guys do to solve that? To check in, to make sure that the student was getting what she paid for, to make sure that the tutor was doing what he wanted, what he needed to do?
Yeah, it's something that we're still trying to figure out, to be honest. The way that we've solved it is essentially the other way around. So a bit like other review sites, people leave feedback. So you've got this sort of built-in improvement into the platform where the best tutors get good feedback, the other ones don't, and the best tutors stick around. So yeah, at the start, like there were lots of bad going on, but over time people go to the tutors with the most reviews, and so the system naturally improves.
It's the rating that mattered.
Yeah, the ratings are really, really, really key, because as a platform, like what we're providing tutors really is like a trusted what we're providing parents, like a trusted way to find a tutor. They can ask their friends, but can they read like impartial reviews?
And that was there from the beginning. I've got an early screenshot of the site.
Yeah, we had that right at the start.
Sorry?
We definitely had that right at the start. That was on. We must have this.
And were students able to go in and review their tutors by themselves, or did they have to message you or Scott and say, my rating is 4 out of 5 stars?
They could do it themselves. All you had to do was go to a specific URL. So anyone could have done it if they knew that URL. We've now built it out. So, right, you've actually got to have a couple of lessons before you can leave a review. But initially, yeah, anyone could have left, you know, they could have left themselves a review. And they did once they figured it out.
Right. All right. But version one, that makes sense. Okay. Flyers are not really going to grow a business. You need to go beyond flyers. You ended up discovering that advertising actually worked for you. How did advertising work for you on Google? It's so freaking competitive that it's tough for newer businesses to do well with it. What did you discover that allowed you to do well with Google search ads?
We did it ourselves, and I think that was a real It was a sort of leap at the start, and we wasted a lot of money at the start. You know, we didn't know what we were doing, but we did it ourselves, and that kind of allowed us to, we really understood our business. We just didn't understand advertising. But we could then, just be more sort of real about what we were trying to do. There was no like trying to explain it to an agency and the agency coming back with these things. And once we got the hang of it, it's not the world's most complicated thing. So I think that was one reason. The other was that it's a local business, so we didn't have to compete against Amazon. And you know, if you're selling something, you know that somewhere in the world, they're going to be selling that stuff really, really efficiently, and it's hard to compete when you're doing that. But there were no tutoring companies in Sheffield advertising. In London, there were a fair few, and the big cities. But so we started off pretty small, and we just found it worked where we were. So because it's this local business, we were able to sort of like try and really hone it in Sheffield. And once we got that working, we were like, okay, let's see if we can move it to Leeds and Manchester.
But there was nationwide or worldwide company that was competing against you for tutors, for students who are looking for tutors.
Yeah, there was no one taking it really seriously in the UK at that time. The big companies were sort of the equivalent of Craigslist. Like there were listing sites, and they didn't really advertise. It was a hobby business for them.
Okay.
All right. It's a really word of mouth industry. I think that's changing, but it's a sort of underground industry as well. You know, there's not that many professionals do it. It's you know, a friend of your sister's is a kid, and it's all those sorts of connections.
Babysitting used to be that way, and I'm noticing that it's becoming more of a service with a marketplace. And okay, all right, so I see that the labor department started investigating the gig economy. What were they doing exactly, and how did it affect you guys?
I probably can't go into too many of the details, but essentially, the gig economy is I think one of these things that, the legislation's not quite caught up to the reality of what's going on. And we basically found ourselves on the wrong side of that. I don't think through any fault of our own. It's some government minister decided that this is something that needs to be looked at. The messages got passed down and down and down, and we sort of started getting really angry emails. And we actually had someone come visit us in the office, and you know, pretty bluntly say that, you know, the way that the business is operating is you can't do it. It's illegal. And you know, we hired a lawyer at the time, and we were really struggling to think of, right, actually, like, technically, like, it could be true. And so that was a sort of,
it could be true that they have to be employees of your company.
Yeah, it was a really sort of technical point. It was around employment laws. Not that they had to be employees. It was sort of a quirk of UK law, essentially.
What did you do to get around that quirk?
Eventually, like, we kind of realized, well, actually, it was a phrasing question on the way that we were sort of billing and things like that. We spent a lot of money on lawyers, but we had a lot of sleepless nights. But there were definitely times where I was like, I can't see a way around this. This is really bad news.
Can you be more specific? What did you end up having to do to get around, and what were you getting around?
The specifics, I probably shouldn't go into, too much. There's been lots of cases in the UK around companies like Deliveroo and Uber have sort of been caught on the wrong side of this.
Uber now has to pay health insurance, I think, for their drivers in the UK, right?
Yeah. I think the issue with companies like that we don't have is, for them, it's full-time jobs, and they are literally told what to wear, what to drive, and where to go. Whereas ours is very much, no one's doing it full time. You sort of choose where you want to go. We have very little control over the end product at all. So it wasn't an aspect to do with that. It was an aspect to do with actually some legislation that stopped companies who wanted to advertise from taking a fee for getting work. It was kind of a really sensible bit of legislation, but when it was written, it was the 1970s, and they were worried about a totally different thing happening. We just got caught up in that way.
All right, let me close it out by asking you this. What's the revenue? You've worked hard. You went from being a guy putting flyers door to door to someone who's got real sales. What's the revenue?
I can't tell you the revenue. We're doing somewhere between 20 and 40,000 bookings a month at the moment.
20 and 40,000 bookings a month?
Yeah.
Exactly, a month? Yeah.
A month, yeah.
All right, so you get paid what, like £20?
Yeah, that's probably...
Let's say 30,000 bookings times £20 per. We're looking at... No, could that be over $500,000? $600,000?
A month. Yeah, that's probably...
Wow-wee. All right. Impressive. And you guys are how old now? Let me see, actually. I've been staring at my notes here for a long time. There, since 2015. So about 3 years old.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
Congratulations. I imagine now somebody is listening to this podcast, listening to this, or grabbing the transcript, showing it to someone else, saying, look at what they did in a marketplace. They probably are not going to be able to create a tutor marketplace.
Oh, I hope not.
But I imagine they're saying, I got another idea for a marketplace. Here's something else that's just way too Gardner marketplace. Or I don't know, something that's a little bit too antiquated in the way that it deals with its customers. And maybe they're going to upgrade because of you. All right. Anyone who wants to go check it out should go check out. It's tutorful.co.uk. I can't believe that you people in other countries still use the dot this, dot that, like .co.au, right? Isn't that what they do in Australia?
Yeah. I mean, if it's good enough for the BBC, it's good enough for us.
I know, but it would drive me nuts. Why don't we just go with .uk? All right, but it's
tutorful.
I like short. Tutorful.co.uk. Really, it's... Congratulations. I see you're getting a little bit squirmy because you're uncomfortable that I did the math on your revenue, aren't you?
No, not at all. Yeah.
Okay, good. Because I know you didn't want to reveal the numbers, and I said, look, I'll do a little bit of math here or something, but I won't poke too much. All right, Tutorful, thank you so much for doing this interview, and thank you to my two sponsors. Number one, the conference where you get to go hang out with other Mixergy listeners and other entrepreneurs is firesideconf.com/Mixergy. And number two, if you want to start a website or move your hosting company to a better hosting company, it's HostGator, HostGator.com/Mixergy. Mark, thanks so much for doing this.
I really appreciate it. Thanks.
Cool. Bye.